Welcome to the Draw.Biz Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm your host John Crockett and we are talking all things trick or treat for our Halloween show. Those are players that did all right throughout the year but we think they're going to trick us next year into just going back to full crap, and the other way around, underperformed players who are going to pleasantly surprise us and give us a bit of a treat. As well as another draft, we are doing horror movie villains. Should be an interesting one to do that. This week, and to help us as always is Stevie Fizz. Welcome to you.
Yeah, g'day Jono and g'day to the listeners. Not excited for the horror movie villains. Not my forte. Long time listeners may remember I had a dalliance watching horror movies. This was like early days, Jono. This was when we were back recording in my unit in Frankston, and I I'm not a horror movie watcher, but I just went through this phase where I watched one every night for like 2 weeks. And eventually I started having nightmares and shit and pushed myself out of the bed and went backwards through the window. And if it wasn't for the blind, like my back would have been just shredded to bits. Like, so, not my forte. So I'm just guessing.
All right. And we welcome him from all the way from Brisbane is Cam. Welcome to you.
Yeah, g'day. I was going through, you know, horror movie villains, having a look at some of the names there, and I found Stato, Leatherface.
Well, that could be you as well. There's too much sun in Brisbane there.
Well, that's true. That's me when I'm 50. I'm going to look like a leather couch.
Well, that's like every female in Queensland. It's just they've got that leathery skin and snakes. Ugh. All right, let's get into it. Cam, why don't you run us through your first trick, please?
First trick? So, only trick is actually Lockie Hunter from the Dogs. And it feels a little bit like shooting fish in a barrel, or in Lockie's case, crashing into parked cars. On paper, he looks like the fourth best averaging player in AFL fantasy and the 12th best in Supercoach, which is career best from him. And he did it on the back of maintaining his scoring output from the previous year, even in the shorter game time. So all of his disposal counts, tackles, marks, it's all pretty consistent year on year. And even more impressively, and this is something that I got wrong the other week, I kind of thought that he'd sort of played the same amount of game time that he would have last year anyway in the shortened format by just staying on the ground. But that's horribly wrong. He did it on the back of reduced game time in the shorter format this year, which is really impressive. So he was a full 9% year on year down for time on ground in percent. And, you know, there was a 40% time on ground in there. So that's a little bit of a, even when you normalize that and remove that, it's still actually unders what he would normally do. One thing we always look at in regards to people that may regress the next year or be a trick next year is sort of how high they're going to be ranked, but then also their previous year, if it's been a career year. And this really was a career year for Lockie Hunter, and even though he's only 26 going into next year, I believe, I find it hard to believe that he's going to be able to maintain what is essentially an average of 125 next year. It's just, it's so out of proportion of what he would normally score. And, you know, given that you're going to have to pay up probably a top 10 pick if you want to draft him next year based on his average, I think that's a bit of a trick.
Do you think that happens though? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we see these guys, like Steel Sidebottom's average is really high. He's not going to go there.
Yeah. No, and I think Sidey, the difference between Sidey and Hunter is age, probably, yeah. and opportunity, maybe. So there's probably a world where Sidey pushes back out to the wing, whereas he played a bit more on the inside when he was scoring well this year. Lockie Hunter, yeah, 26.
What if Dunkley leaves? Like, just hypothetically, you know, he's obviously not going to average 125, but could he at least return value at that point?
So I actually looked at Dunkley, whether or not he affected Hunter's score at all. And because he played so much time in the ruck, Like, that was my original take was, Dunkley's going to play more midfield time if he stays, because that'll be part of the deal, like part of the sweetener for why he stays will be, you know, they'll guarantee him more midfield time. And that'll therefore see Lockie Hunter dip. But even if he leaves, like, it's the same. Mm. So I think where the trick comes in is more that it's probably going to be a bit more dispersed, and you'll see Bailey Smith pick up a lot more next year.
So you think he'll be drafted sort of back of the first, definitely a second, and probably yep. return more fifth round value?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where he's probably at as well. I agree. I'm going to go with my first trick. You can stop me if you don't want me to go on with it, but in the group chat, I did say I want to trick Geelong because they are going to get every single player under the sun, and it's really going to affect a lot of their players. You look at them, like Dangerfield, getting older. We saw him play a lot more forward time. The fraud, the ultimate fraud, again, he's... With Higgins coming in, they've also got Jack Stephen coming back from injury. There's going to be a big spread of ball use amongst these guys, but they're not just going to be all going to be scoring 110 like Duncan, Menegola. I think it really affects these guys, especially if I think they're bringing Higgins in to play the Ablett role, but someone's got to miss out. And I think you're going to see a more even scoring line for the Cats next year, and but not have, say, a Dangerfield go 130 and a 120 in AFL Fantasy and Supercoach. It's going to be more, they're actually all going to just be evened out, like your Mitch Duncan 105 type scores that we saw throughout the year. But what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, especially with Cam. Well, you've left their best player out in Cam Guthrie.
Cam Guthrie as well. As well, I think, well, he only averaged 105. So,
oh,
as
only 105. Oh, what a pedestrian average from my round 20 pick.
But they're top guys. They're, I don't see them going big 120s. I mean, I think you've got a Cats player. I'll let you talk about him in Tomahawk. But
thanks, big... Jono. Fucking.
But that's, I was saying, I'll let you talk about him.
What a reveal.
Look at it in a different way, though. So, say they land Jeremy Cameron, right, and that trade goes through. Is there still a need to have Danger up forward? Can Danger push through the midfield more? And if that's the case, and they do still play Danger in that three-tier, like pronged forward line, I think someone like a Mitch Duncan will still be really consistent, and maybe it frees him up to play a bit more inside.
Well, Duncan's always been pretty consistent. He hasn't had that big banger average year.
And I can actually see Cam Guthrie continuing, as crazy as that is. Like, he had a great year, but why would he slow down now? He's 27, I think, or 28, yeah.
Who were the big averages, though? Like, Danger didn't average what he has in the past. Zellwood's pretty well washed at this point.
Dead, yeah.
And has been for a couple of years.
Well, Danger averaged, what, 120 in Supercoach this year? That's still pretty good for the midfield.
He did 100 in AFL Fantasy.
Did he?
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, he did 81.7, 82.1 for Menegola, 84.8 for Duncan, and 84.9 for Guthrie.
So, yeah, they're not massive.
They're not massive, but they're good.
Yeah, it's still solid. I think trick for the team is maybe a little bit harsh, but I can see where you're coming from in regards to mouths to feed.
Yeah, I think there's just going to be too many mouths of these.
But are they going to be
Higgins?
Are they going to be good?
The team, yeah. They should still be competitive.
They're not all going to fall off.
But they're all old. But they could.
They could.
They're old. They're old, dude. Didn't want to bring that out, but they're old.
What? So. I don't know. You're going to get some right and some wrong on that one, I reckon.
I sort of see it like the St. Kilda conundrum that we've always spoken about. There's too many mouths to feed. And that's how I'm just seeing it. I'm going to avoid it next year.
Well, I said about St Kilda is like I didn't know who was going to be good and who was going to be shit. Like Jack Steele was amazing.
Mm. Oh, but we always knew Jack Steele was a good player, but never thought he'd be what he was this year, though.
No, but I think that's the thing. Like, rather than saying they're all going to be, I mean, maybe your point is that just avoid them because you don't know the situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming up. Steve, run us through your trick, please.
Yeah, well, my trick's Tomahawk, as Jono mentioned. Thanks, you fucking dickhead. I've actually got reasons why he's going to drop off. So he averaged the 88.5 adjusted Dream Team and the 105.8 Supercoach. Those are career highs. He does turn 33 next season. Don't hold that against him, though. So his averages place him in the top 10 forwards for Dream Team, and he was second overall in Supercoach. Remove some of the guys who are going to lose forward status, and he's going to be right up there. So probably one of your higher drafted forwards, I'd imagine. I feel like the issue is Jeremy Cameron's arrival. I know GWS has matched, but we assume that a trade will happen at some point. I know it might not, but these things usually get done. There is evidence in the past to suggest that the arrival of another good key forward is not good for the already established key forward. If we look at Richmond, Handsome Tom has arrived. He's had his worst two fantasy averages over the last 2 years since his third season. Jack Riewoldt has gone from very usable player to absolutely unrosterable. Kurt Tippett went from being usable at Sydney to falling off a cliff when Buddy Franklin arrived. When Gunston went to Hawthorn, believe it or not, his third season, Buddy was about the same, but in his fourth season, 2013, he fell off 25 Supercoach and 13 Dream Team points. And then he obviously left the next year. And probably the big one, when Jesse White went to Collingwood, Travis Cloke did drop off 20 points. Now, that's a bit of a joke, but it did happen.
I was going to say, when the big Q stick came in, what would happen there?
Well, I don't know. I was talking about guns, mate. Jesse White, right? There are instances of it working the other way. Like when Jared Waite went to North Melbourne, Drew Petrie was coming off a dog shit year. He did go up a little bit, but never got back to a usable fantasy option. And when Jay Schultz went to Port, Westhoff actually got a boost, but I would argue that the guys I've mentioned who fell off a cliff are more the stay-at-home forwards, which I imagine you would consider Tomahawk to be. The closest thing Tomahawk's had to a partner in crime would probably be James Podziadli. Maybe you could argue Mitch Clark, but he only played the 9 games over a couple of years. And when Pods was there for the 4 seasons, Hawkins had 1 fantasy usable season. The rest were kind of meh at best. So I just think it's bad news for someone who's probably going to be drafted very highly.
Yep. And I think you've got to look at, I guess, the key forwards that score really well are those that sort of lead up and get up the ground. And Tomahawk did that this year, and he did it last year. But they'll need someone to sit back, and Jeremy Cameron is a better up-the-ground player than Tomahawk. So Tomahawk will probably take the key defender every week and sit in the goal square.
Yeah, I would have thought that at this point of their careers.
With Tomahawk's sort of his forward ruck craft, would he have gotten much benefit out of that? Like,
oh, heaps, actually.
Because awesome. He was getting the taps and kicking snags from it, so there's points there as well.
But for some reason, teams didn't cotton on to the fact that he literally just grabs it out of the air almost every contest and has a shot. It's like,
exactly.
They'll stop that next year.
Again, more reason for the points to go down. Yeah. Cam, run us through your treat, please.
Yeah, so my treat, I think more than normal next year, it's going to be a year to punt rucks. So I know that this year was an awesome year to punt rucks. Last year was an awesome year to punt rucks. But next year is the year to definitely punt rucks again. The 10th best averaging ruck this year was Jared Witts. And while I don't think he's going to be waiting there to be drafted as the 10th best ruck, because anyone with two eyes and a brain can see that he had a down year after averaging 90s for the last 3, it gives you perspective about what may be available. And as far as treats go, I think that Oscar McInerney is one of the best, coming in there at the average of 57.6 and 82.7 in Supercoach, or the 18th best ruckman on average. So he's hiding deep in the pack, and with list sizes still to be confirmed, the Lions are yet to offer Steph Martin another contract for another year. Depending on the outcome of that, Hell, maybe even regardless of that, I think it spells really good signs for Big O in the ruck solo. When he plays solo in the ruck, he can absolutely score, and he showed that in rounds 10 through 15 this year. Across the period, he averaged 71 AFL fantasy and 96.8 Supercoach, and admittedly, this included a score of 50 and 59 in AFL fantasy and Supercoach respectively against the Saints, where he got absolutely monstered by the Romar-Ryder combo. But across the same period, he also matched up on Grundy and Goldie for two really, really good scores. So I think it shows that he can potentially match it with, you know, some of the top tier ruckmen, and maybe he'll be a little bit exposed when he's against a dual combo. What gives him a little bit more treat potentially is if he retains dual position ruck forward status. I think it makes it a little bit harder to draft him because he'll probably go off the board earlier than he would if he was a ruck solo, just a ruck position. But either way, I think it's pretty treat as fuck.
Yeah, I think your point is there's going to be a lot of good rucks next year.
Like, yeah, correct.
Like, there might actually be a GWS ruck that's draftable.
Yikes.
Good God almighty.
You couldn't have thought 2020 would get any worse, yeah. But then 2021 comes along with Braden Proust draftable.
Proust, oh, season. The t-shirts are getting made.
Oh, my God. All right, my treat is Josh Dunkley. Now, this is regardless if he stays or goes, doesn't matter. There's two sides to this one as well. Now, I'll go with if he stays with the Bulldogs, he's going to play midfield time and he is going to score. He had the syndesmosis injury this year, and I think they sort of protected him in that forward/ruck role.
That's how you protect someone? Throw him in the ruck, is it?
Throw him in the ruck.
Chuck him up against Grundy. I'm not sure. See what happens.
But the thing was with his rucking, there was only that one game where he played like half a game. The rest was only maybe he took 5 or 6 bounces or contests. So he didn't take actually a lot of contests. And as I said, I think they were just looking after him with his syndesmosis. There was more high octane sort of games. So he'll be fine.
Dude, there were legitimately contests where Tim English was a rover. And Dunkley rucked.
But that was that one game. It was just that one game.
I think it was more than one game, dude. I feel like it was a few games in the back end of the year. And he, like, there were times when he was leading the hitouts for the Dogs.
Maybe there was two games, two or three of them. I don't think it was that.
That says a lot about Tim English.
Yeah.
But if you look at Josh Dunkley's scores this year, from his 11 games, he had 5 Supercoach tons and 3 AFL fantasy tons. He's... In 2019, he averaged 116 Supercoach, 111 AFL fantasy. This obviously came back to the pack this year, just the 77 in AFL fantasy and 104 in Supercoach. We do know he's a scorer. He probably won't get to those lofty heights if he stays at the Bulldogs, but we do know there is that talk of him going to Essendon, where if he does go to Essendon, then he's going to be that round one pick that we've all had him the last couple of years, and I see him getting back to that 116, 110 average that we've seen the previous year for Josh Dunkley. So he's my treat for next year.
You know what I'd do if I knew a player was leaving? I'd throw him in the ruck and get smashed up.
Well, Essendon are looking for a new ruck, so maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, so I think what really works in Dunkley's favour is an article that I was reading just before, which kind of summarised all what's going on with the trades and all that sort of stuff. And the Dogs are hunting for another ruck. They want someone terrifying to back up for Tinglish. It's, yeah, so I think, you know, if they really do want a backup ruck for Tinglish, then Dunkley could be back to being good.
A few years ago, the Dogs were right in to Stephen Martin before he signed his contract extension at Brisbane. Yeah. So there is, you know, little whispers there for a year or two while English develops it. You get Steph in there. So,
well, once list sizes come out, there's going to be a heap of big dudes sitting there
looking
cheap
for a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't know if there's going to be that mid-season draft, which we had last year as well, do we?
I don't know. I'm cagier on Dunkley, but...
Yeah.
What? Tell me your cage.
It's the Bulldogs. It's Bevo. That's all there is. It's not science.
That's all that needs to be said.
Maybe Bevo is science. Bevonium. It's like some weird element that just fucks with fantasy. Bevonium.
There's a t-shirt in that as well.
I don't know. That Bev show, dude, might have copyright on it.
Possibly. Steve, run us through your treat, please.
My treat is Jack Scrimshaw. He averaged the adjusted 72 Dream Team and 74 Supercoach. When James Sicily went out, that went up to 85 in both formats. So James Sicily, long-term injury. You got a player coming into his fifth season, should be more settled. Fifth season, obviously, they can start. Third and fifth year is generally some sort of a breakout or establish themselves. So Frawley's retired as well. Maybe that's not a good thing. Isaac Smith and Henderson are out. They don't play the same position, but it just means there's going to be a lot of movement, I think, within the Hawks' best 22. Jarman Impey should be back. He has been a halfback before. Maybe he goes to wing. It's certainly there's possessions and disposals there that are up for grabs, so I don't necessarily think a good player like Impey coming back hurt Scrimshaw. I just, you know, with Sicily out, he's getting a bump. That's all there is to it.
Well, Impey did play, I think, the last half a dozen games.
Yeah, he's coming off nothing season.
But he was actually playing forward. He was actually playing a bit more forward, so I don't know if that was because he didn't have the fitness, but... He was killing it before he did do that ACL for halfback.
Yeah, he was a good player, man. Like, I like him. He's fine. I just think, Scrimshaw showed his wares in the second half, and there should be all the opportunity in the world at Hawthorn. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I do like the Scrimshaw pick. Any thoughts, Cam, or nah?
Oh, do you go Scrimshaw a day?
I was on Scrimshaw as soon as the injury happened. He got the bump. Form top, like, it's sort of pedigree. Pedigree, opportunity, development. So it's all sort of there for him.
Fair enough. All right, we are going to roll into the draft section of the show. It is horror movie villains. I do have the number generator all lined up this week. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
It's preparation. It's probably your pet subject, Jono, compared to us, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the actual, the listeners are probably going to gravitate towards the more popular ones. And, even though it's not a horror movie, you'd love to have Shooter McGavin on there. We did that. We did villains already. We did movie villains. Yeah, I know. All right. Number generator, Cam, you are number one. Steve, you are number two. And I'm number three.
All right.
So I'm going to start things off with... watch me fuck this one up. I'm going to take the Xenomorph from Alien.
Yeah, you've already fucked it up.
What?
Because it's not a first round pick.
Ugh.
It's a good villain, though.
Yeah.
It is a good villain.
It really doesn't have many weaknesses.
Yeah.
I'll take Freddy Krueger. This feels like...
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah.
Number one pick.
I will take Pennywise the Clown.
What?
Yeah, man.
I had him number two. Recency bias.
Mm-hmm. And Mike Myers from Halloween.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I'm going to go with...
It's not your pick.
It's my pick.
No, I'm going to go with it anyway, so you go first, and then I'll still go with it.
I'll take Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, nice.
I'm going to take Jack Torrance from The Shining.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And then I'm going to follow that one up with... Jason Voorhees.
He's a bit nuff. Bit naff,
he's a bit shit.
He's like, obviously a popular pick, but he's just a shit villain.
I only went with him because he's a popular pick, but he's terrible.
Yeah.
I'll take Candyman for racial diversity.
Okay, on the turn, I'm going to go Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Man, that movie was fucked up.
Well, yeah. and The Thing from The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. Not that remake piece of shit.
Hmm.
Still some good stuff on the board.
Yeah, I got two I'm really debating. I'm not sure if either of them are really the bad guy. I'm going to take Patrick Bateman.
Yeah, he's on my list. He was on my list. Cam.
I'm going to roll with... Is that a horror?
It was in the list. That's why I went with it. I don't really think of it. I don't think of it as a horror.
And I was like, Jen, what about Patrick Bateman? She goes, that's not a horror.
Yeah.
So it's not on my list.
Well, it was on the horror movie list.
It was on the horror movie list.
What list is this?
Well, there was a bunch of lists on the internet. One of them had Predator. Lists. That's why I did see. Well, I'm like, can I get Predator in there? Does that count?
No, yeah, I was trying to work that in too. But, yeah. Even Godzilla and Godzilla's enemies were on the list.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, is Patrick Bateman the enemy? Or is society the enemy?
Patrick Bateman's the anti-hero.
Was the ATM machine.
I'm going to follow Steve's racial diversity pick, and I'm going to take Samara from The Ring. The Ring Girl.
I've never seen it.
I think I've seen the American version, not the Japanese version.
Yeah.
But
it's good.
So is that it?
There's one more round. That's four rounds.
That's it.
So Cam's got it. Xenomorph, wow. Jack Torrance, Jason Voorhees, and Samara. I've got Freddy Krueger, Hannibal Lecter, Candyman, and Patrick Bateman. Jono's got Pennywise, Mike Myers, Annie Wilkes, and The Thing.
See, I did have the Deadites from Evil Dead, but I don't know if people would have had them. That movie scared the shit out of me as a kid. Like, I was forced to watch it at eight years old, but yeah, nightmares.
I had Dr. Joseph Hater.
Who?
Have you heard of a movie called The Human Centipede?
Oh, yeah.
He's the guy who builds the centipede.
I think I had Chucky, Stripe, Stripe from Gremlins, and Frankenfurter.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah, I also had
Dr. Frankenstein, he's the villain, isn't he? Not the monster.
The doctor's the villain.
The villain. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Ghostface was like third on my list. How did he get through?
Yeah.
I feel like I got a good team, though.
Yeah.
Maybe he's better than Patrick.
Seth Brundle from The Fly as well. Good movie. Good villain.
Are we going to do, like, what would happen if they fight?
As long as it's in an open field in broad daylight, your xenomorph is gone.
Does your xenomorph sleep? Do all your characters sleep?
I don't think the xenomorph does. So he doesn't even get to say hello to Freddy.
He can't say Candyman five times either.
Well, he can't. Yeah. I think you're in trouble.
Well, but he also can't lose.
Patrick Bateman would have a better business card, though.
But you see, the thing inhabits body, so it just takes your xenomorph and kills itself and then moves on to the next one.
Ooh. And, like, if it's going to be in an open field, Jason Voorhees won't be there because he's around the lake. It doesn't even make it to the fight. I've picked a terrible team.
Again.
We're now doing drafts that are going to fight each other. So our biscuits are going to fight each other.
Well, Scotch fingers are loose. It just snaps in half. It's built for, exactly right. For failure.
It is built to break. Or does it have an extra person at the fight?
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, now we're getting deep. All right. We are going to wrap it up the show this week. If you want to follow us on social media, do that by checking us out on Twitter, at The Draft Doctors. Also search us on Facebook. If you've got any ideas, questions or queries, send them on through and... thanks for listening. More trade week talk next week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.